A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
A Netflix documentary. A title appears, Julia's Stepping Stones. An older, short-haired white woman, Julia, sits at her desk in a cluttered home office. She holds a phone to her ear and looks at her computer screen. Summer 2009.
The weather is fantastic. It's a gorgeous day. Oh, I can talk more or less, or I could even, we could try speakerphone, but that's probably not good for, this is for you, just for, I mean, this is for, not for so much broadcast purposes as for note-taking purposes, right?
Later, Julia sits out of view at a window.
I'm looking out at my garden. I was just about to plant some sweet potatoes, which is late, but it's been a very stressful time because of this new film, and just whenever you get close to a deadline, I guess I forgot, you know, but it's like there's always these endless decisions and it's really hard to give up on stuff that you really like, but you really have to. So we're hitting that wall for sure right now. No, that's okay. And I know I can go for an hour or so. Because this is stuff I love. I really actually enjoy talking about. I mean, not only hearing my own story, but I love hearing this from other people too, because it's like, how did your life path turn out the way it did? And there's like social forces, there's personal forces, there's like historic, you know, it's always so interesting, like how do we all turn out?
The scene cuts to black. In a black and white photo of a dock, a young Julia wears swim trunks. She carries a bucket in one hand and a fishing pole in the other.
Did I ever wear shoes in the summer? Or a shirt even? Here's me on a typical day at the Jersey Shore on our dock. I was a ball of curiosity and energy who could lose herself in the bay. Or in the ocean, on the ocean's edge.
Archival stills of young Julia at the beach appear.
Or walking for miles down New Jersey beaches by myself. We spent all summer on the Jersey Shore, living in a trailer, my brothers and I and my parents. Boats, fishing, clamming, spearing, crabs.
A photo of young Julia and her mother in the ocean.
Here's me and Mom. I love nature. I hated dresses.
A photo of young Julia wearing a dress with a full skirt and bows. Various archival footage of young Julia and her family plays. Outside, Julia wears a plaid shirt, ripped jeans, and sneakers. She jumps and kicks her feet in the air. Her brother grins and joins her. In the winter, Julia and one of her brothers run through the snow. Julia sits behind her brother on a sled. She turns to the camera as they slide forward. They hit a tree stump with their sled and fall into the snow.
I was a tomboy. A geeky, bespectacled girl.
A photo of Julia's mom in a nurse's uniform.
My mom worked 3-to-11 shift at a hospital.
A photo of her dad with a bone saw.
Dad was a butcher, never finished 8th grade. He brought his pay home in cash in a little manila envelope in his shirt pocket. There were no books or pictures in my house, or anyone else's house I knew, but we had a secure life. He was a union man, a Republican. We owned our home.
Now, Julia sits in her office.
I mean, we were very much a working-class family. I have 3 brothers, family of 4, one, you know, the kind of house that back then we had 1 bathroom, 3 bedrooms. We all shared bedrooms. You know, just to me, it was a big house. And both my parents worked, so we could take vacations every summer, you know.
Footage of Julia and 2 of her brothers.
Because of the union, we had vacations. We traveled the United States, Canada. We traveled to far-flung places in America. We even went to Mexico over the border. We saw the Grand Canyon, Native American ruins. Those impressed me the most. I read all the guidebooks, asked questions of the park rangers. Streams of questions ruled my mind. This expanded my world so much beyond the small town and the other kids I grew up with.
A photo of Julia in a forest.
I was a good student. I loved to write. For some reason, I just think I was a little more curious. I didn't quite fit in. I wore glasses before anybody else. You know how something like that can make you feel different?
I was like the four eyes. I was kind of bookish, and I just sort of read more. I wasn't that pretty.
It was the Cold War. We'd scan the skies for Russian missiles. Whispers of the civil rights movement reached our little town.
Footage of a protest.
I realized I wanted to be a journalist. I always thought if we could just understand each other, there wouldn't be this conflict, no wars. Yet in the real world, then, the top options for girls' futures were teacher, secretary, or nurse. Then marriage.
A photo of Julia and two children.
Here's a picture from my life now at 73. My two grandkids in our nearby woods. The stepping stones across the stream. I've been thinking about my stepping stones of life. How did I get to where I am from where I was? How did that happen?
In archival footage, young Julia holds a camera.
My dad got me a camera, a 35-millimeter rangefinder Argus, when I was about 13. I wanted to really learn how to use it, so I found some old books about photography at the library. I learned about f-stops, depth of field, focus, framing. I mailed my rolls of color film away and got prints back in the mail. Life magazine came to our doctor's office, and I loved the photographs. I wanted so much to get out of my small town, on my own.
A black and white film.
Yes, if you don't make an effort to understand them, teenage girls may seem silly and opinionated, and with unrealistic ideas of their own future.
A girl lies on her bed.
I wrote away for flyers from American youth hostels and various summer camps. My parents told me summer after summer, "We can't afford it, Julia. We just can't afford it." But then when my brother turned 17, my older brother, they bought him a convertible Ford Supersport. Well, the idea of going to college caught hold of me, even though I didn't know anyone who went to college. In our library at the high school, there was a book called Lovejoy's Guide to Colleges. It gave you a description of each college, the cost, their address. So I started sending postcards asking for catalogs. I started with the A's. I wrote away to Adelphi, Albion, Bates, Cornell, Oberlin, Swarthmore, all the way through the alphabet. I had stacks of catalogs in my bedroom, read them late into the night. So I applied to a handful of colleges, and I got in. But I picked Antioch College because it was the furthest away, in Ohio, 600 miles. I paid my own way.
A photo of Julia posing with a motorbike.
Antioch. You could work half the year, travel abroad, not have to go home all summer. I'd worked since I was 15, so that appealed to me.
She sits astride the bike.
In our freshman dorm, all the girls sat around in a circle that first day and were asked to say what our parents did, where we came from. One girl said, "My dad is an engineer." Another, "My dad and mom are lawyers." "My dad is a poet." "My dad is a professor at a university. My mom plays in the symphony." When it came to me, I couldn't say, "My dad works in the meat department at a grocery store. He's a butcher." I said instead that he was the manager of a grocery store. Even that was below the other parents' occupations. Right away, I started developing a story of who I am, a false story based on shame. Who I am is not right here. There would be more lies to follow.
Footage of a suburb.
I went into my college friends' homes that were much bigger, much more somehow sophisticated, with books, photos, paintings. There were actual discussions around the dinner table with glasses of wine. In my house growing up, dinner was 5 minutes. We never talked around that dinner table.
A photo of a dark room sits in film strip panels.
At college, I did find others who loved photography, and I learned to develop and print pictures. We created the first dark room at Antioch, where I spent hundreds of happy hours. We learned about photographers of the day, Robert Capa, Dorothea Lange, Robert Frank, Henri Cartier-Bresson, Bruce Davidson, beautiful works of art. But capturing everyday people, I didn't realize till years later that we were not taught about Black photographers who were working, like Gordon Parks, Roy de Carava.
A photo of a silhouetted woman walking across a street with two children.
Seeing certain films deeply impressed me. Weisman's Titicut Follies.
They are the migrants, workers in the sweatshops of the soil.
Edward R. Murrow's Harvest of Shame, about farm workers' lives.
In a film, a Black man in a cap harvests plants.
Même un paysage tranquille.
Night and fog.
Même une barbed wire stretches between wooden poles.
I did not know about the Holocaust until I saw that film by Alain René. I realized that through seeing films, people could be exposed to alternative points of view on history, on life, on themselves, because I was. And the act of making photographs and films could be a way of understanding the world.
A barbed wire fence stands around brick buildings. Headlines from the Cleveland Press appear.
A stepping stone, my first Antioch co-op job. Cleveland Press copy boy. Remember, I want to be a journalist. When the writers called boy, that was me. I noticed right away that there were no women on the floor, except in the style and fashion area way back there.
A photo of Julia in a newsletter.
I recently came across this little newsletter put out by the Cleveland Press composing department. And I was so struck by the casual, unexamined sexism.
Her chest features in the photo.
I was uncomfortable when I saw this picture published back then. Embarrassed, but I really didn't understand why. They had asked me to pose like this with the idea that I had really good posture. Do you see up there?
A drawing of padded women's underwear.
Don't be fooled, guys.
A photo of Julia holding a cat.
After about 2 years of college, I dropped out. It was just all too much. I never felt I fit in. I felt like an imposter. Everyone was smarter than me. The male dean who I'd gone to talk with said, "Yeah, you should drop out. You should go to a state school. Keep your grades up for now."
Footage of Julia walking up a slope.
Looking back, I realize I began to understand how hard it is to change one's class background, to move up, to be comfortable. By the way, I never had a female or a person of color as a professor at Antioch.
A photo of Julia fades to black.
In that time as a dropout, a lot changed in the United States.
Photos of Julia smiling with pink and yellow paint on her face appear.
The hippies, anti-war. I hitchhiked to San Francisco to the sounds of Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone, not realizing then that this would be called the Summer of Love.
Archival footage plays. People bang their hands against drums. A brunette white woman dances barefoot with a bearded Black man. A blonde white woman wearing sunglasses grins. People fill a field. An old map of New York City appears.
Landing after that hazy California summer in New York City, my job was as a waitress at the West End Bar uptown, near Columbia University.
Footage of a strike.
We call on all students, faculty, and workers of the university to support our strike.
When the Columbia University strike took place that spring, 1968, I was serving beer to tables full of students talking about politics and issues. Sometimes I would try to join in. I was their age. I was a student too. But since I was the waitress, they ignored my questions. They ignored me. I was put in my place.
A photo of Antioch College.
I came back to Antioch after 15 months. Right after Bobby Kennedy was killed. A big stepping stone, the radical left came into my life. It was all around. The anti-war movement, the Black Power movement, the Black Panthers. Reading Marx, Engels, Ho Chi Minh, Lenin, Chairman Mao, Che Guevara. Studying all of this new literature, I came to understand the word class as an identity, and more important, as a motivating force in history. The revelatory thought that the working class has been a driving force in history, and that I, rather than being nothing, an imposter, or my background being something to hide and lie about, that I have a part to play as a working class person. That's a major stepping stone.
I was learning about imperialism, capitalism, socialism, communism, and it was like, okay, there's another way to go. It doesn't have to be like this. We read stuff, we talked, and study groups and all that. But it was all men who talked. It was all men. Or there was the occasional woman, it was like clearly she had to struggle to speak. It was just very, I mean, not that we were conscious of that, of course, but, you know, it didn't take much for you to stop and realize what the hell is going on here.
A photo of a bushy-haired white man.
I met Jim Klein in a film class. He was 3 years younger. I had a boyfriend. We kind of hung around together. He played the piano. He loved working on the radio. I loved being at the radio station. Later, we fell in love after a screening of Cassavetes' Faces, which I know is a little funny.
Footage from Faces plays. A blonde white woman opens a door. A short-haired white woman with a mascara-streaked face shakes her head.
From that day on, Jim and I were inseparable. Here we are on the porch of his comfortable Long Island home, a very Jewish community. Bagels and lox on a Sunday morning, Chinese Friday night, music, books in the house, the Seder, Holocaust stories. I learned so much from his parents and his life. I became a radio geek, working at WISO FM radio. I learned most of the skills of being a filmmaker, how to edit, how to mix music, how to do interviews, how to think about the audience, how to tell a story in a time frame.
A protest.
May we hear from the newspaper reporter, please?
You know you'll never open your morning newspaper and read something like this. Mr. John Smith, a trim young father of three who wears his silky brown hair attractively parted to one side, has announced that he is a candidate for the presidency. Mr. Smith was wearing a smart gray suit that set off his well-proportioned figure admirably. He enjoys impressing friends with his special blueberry muffins.
The biggest influence, the one that made the most sense, was the women's liberation movement. Saying that women's liberation for me was transformative is too small a word. We believed the personal is political. A basic building block of the movement was consciousness-raising groups. I was in the first one at Antioch College. There were five of us. We met for months before there was a sixth. Our consciousness-raising group took on so many topics. What are our feelings about men? What are our feelings about our mothers? We talked about our bodies, about sex, about menstruation, about our intelligence, how we felt about so many things. We sat around one night a week for as long as it took, each of us in turn, to say what we had to say and feel what we had to feel. Every time, it turned out that what we thought was our own personal shame was really an oppression of a group, a huge group, women. All the institutions around us shaped our own image.
Footage of Julia.
I came to understand self-censorship, the self-hatred. Women's liberation was radical to its core. It went to the heart of how people think about themselves and others and all the structures of our society. Women's liberation demanded change in the bedroom, the kitchen, the office.
Julia smokes.
We looked at popular culture's images of women.
A cigarette advertisement.
And we saw that all the images, movies, magazines, ads, television, were made by men, white men, privileged men. Imagine that.
A women's liberation symbol.
We realized that we had to create Our own images form a kind of alternative culture, since mainstream culture was so impenetrable for us. Creating images, telling stories of real women, that was a radical act. So I started a radio show on WYSO, at first called The Single Girl.
Wish I was a single girl again.
The Single Girl is an hour of music and commentary focusing on the problems of women today. I'm Julia Reichert on WYSO FM 91.5 in Yellow Springs, Ohio. We'll start tonight with a song that I've liked for a long time. It's called Michael from Mountains. The man described in the song used to represent a sort of ideal to me. A very romantic ideal, of course, but still, I envied the woman who could have a relationship with such a sensitive, affectionate man. Recently, though, I've changed my mind. Let's listen to Judy Collins singing Michael from Mountains.
Michael wakes you up with sweets, he takes you up streets.
It didn't even occur to me then that the word girl would be questioned, as so many words were back then, like chick, doll, baby. The show basically looked at popular music, like the Rolling Stones, like the women's blues singers, and asked, what is this song saying about women? Who we are, what our lives are, what we want. We all said to ourselves, we wanted to be liberated women, but we really didn't know what that meant.
Archival footage of Julia using a camera.
Alongside this, I took my one and only film class.
A photo of a scruffy white man.
David Brooks blazed into town, 24 years old, and right out of the Filmmakers Cooperative in New York City. An experimental filmmaker. David opened us up to the world of Stan Brakhage.
It's to make you feel what you're doing to me.
The Kuchar brothers. Jonas Mekas.
Footage of horses at a circus.
In case you
Ken Jacobs
needed some music for this.
Maya Deren. We saw all their films.
In black and white, a woman hangs over a staircase.
We shot 8mm film. David empowered us just to shoot what interested us. Edit from our gut.
A still of Julia.
January 1st, 1970, I was talking on the phone with a friend. I had an idea for my senior project at Antioch. Why not make a film? A real film with sync sound. Film combined radio and photography, and a film could reach more people than either. Why not a film looking at women and girls at different ages, how they see themselves, like we did in our CR group in a way? That senior project became Growing Up Female.
In footage from Growing Up Female, a little girl walks to a car.
Now, how could that happen? We didn't have a real camera. We didn't have a tape recorder. We didn't have money for film stock. I will admit that we begged, borrowed, and stole what we needed to make this film. But that's another story.
A dark-haired white woman blinks.
Do you feel it's important for women to be feminine?
Very, very much so. I think every woman should be feminine. I think that every man wants a woman to be feminine. Recognizing a man's masculinity and making him feel more masculine. This is femininity. When I think about a woman being feminine, the way that she can prove that she's a woman, she can have a child, you know, and she can cook and she can sew.
It was filmed in basically 10 days over spring break in March and early April of 1970 in towns around Yellow Springs, Ohio. It has a 2-to-1 shooting ratio, so most of what we shot is actually in the film.
A photo of soldiers.
We edited it right after the students were killed by National Guard at Kent State and Jackson State.
In a photo, bullet holes mark a window.
We edited on an upright moviola that broke down every day and that we had to fix. One day, I edited. One day, Jim edited. One day, I edited. The next day, Jim edited. We believed that the only way to achieve equality was to actually live it. Even though Jim found it easier to edit, we always made it equal.
A photo of Julia and her mom.
With each film, I've imagined my mother over my shoulder in the editing room to be sure she would understand and enjoy the story. That has kept me grounded.
A photo of Julia wearing a name tag.
But what I learned, and it was probably the most valuable and motivating lesson of my entire life, is to use your work to try to change the world. I did everything I could to help the women's movement grow, to help the ideas I had found so very powerful spread to others. But how would we find distribution for this crudely made film? How to get it out?
The Godfather, 1972.
I'll tell you about an important lunch, a stepping stone. A very good distribution company was interested in growing up female. They took Jim and I out to a very fancy lunch at Rocco's Restaurant in the West Village of New York City. They presented the contract. 7 years. We give you an advance. You give up, say, over the movie. We said, we want to be sure we can show the film in women's prisons. Do they have any money? We want to get the film to high school teachers. Do they have any money? What about women's centers? What is that?
Al Pacino shifts his dark eyes.
We realized that the film would no longer belong to us. We'd have no say over cutting the film, the advertising, or description. Really? No say over anything, period. You're the artist, honey. Let us handle all the rest of it. Well, that would be a betrayal of the reasons we made the film. We realized we'd have to do it ourselves. Get this movie to audiences. This actually led to the creation of New Day Films, which we started that year. And New Day went on to become a large filmmaker-owned cooperative distributor for independent films. And it still is today.
Two black straps with rusted buckles surround a box. Crossed out writing reads, educational material.
Do you know what that is? Well, here's a true story. When Growing Up Female was done in 1971, I carried one 16mm print around on a Greyhound bus to find its audience.
Footage of a Greyhound bus.
I went to Cleveland, Ohio. First, I called a handful of friends who were in the women's movement up there, who agreed to set up a projector and a screen and a sound system and invite a few other women's movement people to come together in a living room to watch the film. And they would say, oh, we have to show this film to others. And they would set up a second screening in their city, in a church basement, in a classroom, so more people would see it. Every time I got people's name and address, I would then ask him, where do you know other people in the women's movement? Other people who you'd think should see this in other towns? And sometimes they did. I took a Greyhound to Athens, Ohio, to Washington, D.C. I went to Pittsburgh. I went to New York, to Boston. Have a screening, collect names, type them up. The audiences grew and grew. Discussions were intense after.
Now in her office.
I eventually got invited to Norman, Oklahoma for some reason. That's where I was threatened there. I was literally threatened on the stage physically by a couple guys after the showing. And it's a very gentle film, you know. These were just regular guys. These were just guys who came at the University of Oklahoma to the screening. The women in the audience started saying, like, this is so true. This happened to me too, you know. And you know, like, it's one of those first step films where you realize, yeah, you know, the whole socialization has made me think of myself as a second class citizen. And yes, we have to do something about that. So women start saying that and the men get really upset. Well, we're oppressed too, you know. I think the idea of equality with women, I think instinctively knew that they were on top because women were on the bottom. And they did not want that changed. Plenty of men still don't want that changed, right? So
a Growing Up Female poster.
Jim and I designed and printed this poster and mailed it out to all those people. And orders started to pour in for the film. I learned that films can help change the world. Jim and I learned to do things for ourselves, learn things ourselves. We can all do everything. We can all do anything. All this carved deeper the path of choosing to be an independent filmmaker, to help others remain independent, to retain control of our work, to make the films we felt needed to be made in our own way, in our own place. to make films about everyday people, working people, always listening to the nuances of class, race, and gender. To take the time to get the work to audiences who can use it. And that has been my life.
A photo of Julia at a beach fades to black. Posters from Julia's movies appear. Growing up female. Methadone, an American way of dealing. Union maids. Seeing Red, stories of American communists. A lion in the house. The last truck, closing of a GM plant. Sparkle, American factory. 9 to 5, the story of a movement. Audio description provided by International Digital Center, written by Betty Capoe, voiced by Christine Malick. Credits play over photos of Julia as she gets older. Produced and directed by Julia Reichert and Stephen Bogner. Written and narrated by Julia Reichert. Edited by Stephen Bogner. Co-producer, Lila Mae Klein. Music by Wendy Blackstone, Chad Cannon. Credits continue. Copyright 2024, Julia's Stepping Stones, LLC. In the final photo of Julia, now an older woman, she stands outside beneath a clouded sky and looks off. She holds a video camera with an attached microphone.
A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.